Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. We often hear on radio and television about the building of new homes and more so the lack of affordable housing. But what is affordable housing and social housing, and are they one and the same? How are they defined? How do you become eligible for social housing and who provides it? Well, with me on the line to talk about this is Amanda Tomlinson, who is the CEO of the Black Country Housing Group, to explain all about social housing and her organisation as well. Good evening, Amanda.
Hi there, Clive.
Lovely of you to spend part of your Friday evening with me. First of all, tell me about Black Country Housing and what your organisation does.
Okay. So we are a housing association. We've got around 2,200 homes.
Gosh.
We've got a mix of social and affordable housing. And we provide homes for people with a wide variety of needs and specialities. So, for example, we've got retirement living homes, we've got properties for people with learning disabilities. We've also got two care homes as well as homes for families and individuals. So quite a wide range of activity within BCHG.
Now, you mentioned affordable housing and social housing. What's the difference? Because I'm really confused by that.
Yeah, and the terms get mixed up and used interchangeably. Now, I guess the technical definition, affordable housing sort of was a term that came out more recently in the past decade or so, which linked to grants that government gives to us. And basically, if we build affordable housing, we charge affordable rents, which are broadly 80%. Of what a market rent would be. So if you were renting from the private sector, we charge rents that are 80% of what a private rented sector property would cost. Social rents are actually a lot cheaper, and that's what we used to build in the past. We used to build social housing, and there are some areas of the country where people can still build social housing because rents are so high, but in our locality, actually, we tend to build affordable homes now because they are still affordable for local communities.
So that's for people then who pay, as you say, 80% through their own means. They're people that work and so on and so forth. So are you then saying that social housing is, well, you've just defined social housing, but that is generally geared towards people who are on receipt of appropriate housing benefits?
It depends, Clive. So basically, the rents that we charge are set by the government. There is a rent formula that we have to use to set our rents. So within the tenants that we've got at BCHG, we've got a mix of tenants. So we have a number of people who are working. We have a number of people who are on full benefits, but actually, there's quite a large chunk of people in the middle who are working and claiming benefits.
Right, okay.
So because of the nature of the size of their family, they might be on very low income, they might be working part-time, so there is a need to claim benefits as well to be able to live without being on the breadline and in poverty.
But you see, for people who are happy to pay that 80%, then people are going to go for affordable housing rather than social housing, aren't they?
Well, I should have said, so social housing rents are actually lower than affordable rents.
Right.
But those properties that we're building now will be at affordable rents level. So we are building new homes. I mean, I think you touched on right in your introduction about the huge need for new homes.
Yes.
And that's one of the big challenges for people, and that's why we need affordable housing, because actually what's on offer to people sometimes is beyond their means, or it's not appropriate accommodation for what they need at a particular time in their life. So social rents are actually lower than affordable rents, but those are historical rents. So right. I think, and just to be clear, the government said that says that for every affordable home that we build, we'll charge a rent that is 80% of the market rates. So, and the reason for that is because there's a huge need for affordable housing for people in this country.
Right. So what is the eligibility criteria for people who think they may qualify for affordable housing? Because, you know, if you earn, I don't know, for the sake of argument, £30,000 a year, it's not reasonable, is it, that you should be entitled to affordable housing?
I think that all depends. I think anybody who is potentially eligible will be assessed on their unique circumstances. So everybody has got a different set of circumstances. So people who tend to be, I suppose, higher up the eligibility criteria for affordable housing might be people who live in accommodation where, you know, they're living in overcrowded accommodation, for example. They might be living in a locality where rents are higher, and because of the nature of their income, it's very challenging for them to afford private rented, for example, or they might not be able to get onto the housing ladder. You know, so this is a tenure that is, you know, there and designed to support people. Mm-hmm. So it might be, as I say, overcrowding. It might be people have medical conditions and need a certain type of housing. It might be circumstances in their personal lives. That puts them in a situation where they need affordable homes. Sure. So it all depends, Clive. There's no one size fits all for everybody, and it's not always linked to someone's earnings. But typically, affordable housing will be a tenure of choice for people who may not have other options available to them.
What I think is quite surprising, and perhaps not many people know it, but there is an alarming amount of people who, as you say, may be in an overcrowded environment or, you know, living with somebody else. But they're very often in bed and breakfast accommodation. Now, bed and breakfast accommodation costs local authorities an extortionate amount of money.
It does, absolutely. And you know, for us at BCHG, issues of people in temporary accommodation is right... You know, it grabs my heartstrings because I think that is not desirable, particularly for children.
No.
You know, there was a recent statistic where 125,000 children are living in temporary accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just not acceptable. And I guess it fundamentally comes down to the fact that there are not enough homes for everybody. You know, if there aren't not enough homes, people would not need to spend time in temporary accommodation. And, you know, as I said earlier, that can be, you know, all sorts of circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be people fleeing domestic violence, and it could be, you know, people who have unfortunate circumstances and end up in a homeless situation.
Sure.
So, you know, that's where affordable housing and social housing really meets a significant need.
That's right. Now, we've defined social housing and we've defined affordable housing. Now, the other one is council housing. Is the difference with that simply just because the council owns the properties, whereas in your case, you own your 2,500 properties?
Yes.
It's as easy as that.
So,
I'm not overcomplicating
In essence, council housing is social housing. You know, it's provided for the same purposes. In fact, when people are allocated our own homes, we have agreements with the local authorities whereby the councils nominate people into our homes. So again, you know, people will approach the local authority looking for housing. It might be they get a council house or they might get a BCHG home. You know, it's just very similar. There are differences, obviously, because one's a local authority and one's, in essence, a private company.
Sure.
But what we offer people is broadly the same.
Other than the lack of affordable housing, as you've just said, what are the current challenges face social housing as a whole?
Well, I think there's quite a big one in terms of zero carbon. It's very much exercising our brains at the moment because As we all know, by 2050, we need to achieve certain targets of hitting zero carbon, and actually there's quite a significant issue for this country with regard to housing stock and housing quality, not just social housing, but whether you own your own home or whether you're in private rented accommodation. Our homes aren't fit for purpose for the future. So as housing associations, we're going to have to invest billions, in fact, in our homes over the next sort of less than 30 years now, 25 years-ish. So that's a huge challenge in terms of, firstly, how much does it cost? Secondly, what do we do? What's the best sort of heating system, for example? Because we've all got to change our gas central heat system for something else. So that's quite significant, and that's exercising our brains at the moment. I think from a tenant and local community perspective, obviously, you know, we sort of coming out of COVID in a fashion, but we know it will still be with us. Furlough ends this month. The universal credit, the additional top-up of £20 a week will go. So we have some concerns, significant concerns about what that means for our tenants in terms of job security and ability to pay their rent. And we do offer a lot of support at BCHG because we've got a social business team, so we've got a separate team who work with our tenants to support them to ensure that they can keep their tenancies, pay their rent, afford uniforms and afford to heat their homes and everything that people need to do to live a decent life. So those are some of the big challenges exercising my mind, Clive.
I bet, and I would imagine it's a right old minefield, your mind and the challenges as well, really, because there's so much legal compliance that you have to fall in line with as well. Now, we've talked about, we've established that qualification for social housing is not necessarily down to financial status. How else do people qualify for social housing? Perhaps, let's say, for example, if I was old crumbs, 20, lived at home with parents, couldn't afford my own place, and perhaps things weren't good for me at home for whatever reason. How would I make an approach, either directly to yourselves or whoever, to see if I qualify for social housing? And let's say I'm working.
Yeah, so you could either approach us directly, and we do keep a waiting list, or approach the local authority, and again, they'll have a waiting list, but they'll operate what is called choice-based lettings. So where there are homes, people can bid for those homes as well. It's a very difficult one, particularly for younger people. I think one of the things that we find is that particularly local authority planning departments, are very keen to ensure that there's a mixed tenure of properties. So as an example, we are looking at developing a scheme in Samwell, which will be 1 and 2 bed flats. So that type of accommodation is very suitable for example, a first time tenancy or a single person. So what's important is having the range. So it's not just 3-bedroom houses for families that people need. It's actually a whole mix of different types of accommodation. But for someone who is looking for housing, getting advice directly from housing associations or from the local authority is your best bet.
Now, you said that there is simply, a lack of affordable housing. What percentage of new social housing properties are built on new build developments? Because wherever you go, people say, oh, crumbs, they're building, more houses there. Oh, there'll be no land left, for example. So, how does that work? And how are you involved with the building of new properties?
So in terms of percentages, so there is a requirement occasionally for local authorities to set aside part of a development site for affordable housing. And local authorities have different rules, and that could be 25%, for example, of a site is designated for affordable housing. It could be higher, it could potentially be lower. It depends on the site and it depends on the type of homes that are being developed there and what is appropriate. We at Black Country Housing Group have this year raised £60 million.
Gosh, how have you done that?
We're very pleased about.
How have you done that?
We're a very attractive proposition, Clive. I assure you to the bankers. You know, bankers want to invest. You know, they've got money.
We all
money.
Need housing, don't we?
They've got, we need houses. You know, they make their return by lending out money. It's part of the economy. So, it's really good and really pleasing for us that we attracted 60 million. So what that will mean is that we can build just over 400 homes over the next 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's quite a big chunk, bearing in mind we're only sort of just over 2,000, so we'll be increasing our number of homes quite significantly. So I'm, as Chief Exec, really pleased about that. I mean, the Black Country Plan is out for consultation currently, and that talks about the need for 76,000 new homes over the next 20 years in the Black Country. So, and the national numbers are quite significant because we're looking at millions of homes that are required. 340,000 homes per annum, I think, are required. So, but I think what's important is that we're all playing our part. So we as housing associations, you know, we're not for profit. The whole purpose of why we're here is to build homes and offer affordable housing. So it's quite exciting times for us. We've got, some sites that we're building on already. We've got some that we've got planned over the next few years. And hopefully that will help to address the big crisis at the moment.
But 9 years seems a long time, Amanda.
It does. But we've got to be very conscious of our financial plan. We can't spend it all at once because, in essence, the costs of that would mean that we'd probably tip up into bankruptcy. So it's, financial management for our business is really, really important. So we have got a very, very good finance director. She's planned out where we'll spend the money. I mean, one of the challenges is actually, it does take time to find land. It takes time to build homes. There are significant issues at the moment with everybody's building, and you've probably heard about difficulties with getting materials.
Yes.
People are building extensions. There's wherever you go. I mean, if you look at the skyline of Birmingham, you see a huge amount of cranes.
Mm.
It's exciting, but also it creates pressures as well.
Well,
I think for us, as a smaller organisation, we are quite proud that we've raised this amount of money, that we can build lots of homes, but we're doing it in a very measured way that keeps us financially sustainable.
I suppose Rome wasn't built in a day, was it, as the old saying goes?
No.
Amanda, is affordable housing permanent? So let's say, for example, let's go back to the scenario I gave you. Let's say I'm 20, I'm working, things are not good at home. I meet the eligibility criteria for a one-bedroom flat, as you were just using as an example. Is there any time limit on my being there? Let's say I choose not to marry or anything like that, or have a family, and I carry on in my life just as normal. Am I allowed to stay there forever and ever?
In general, yes. In general. I can't say, categorically in every case. I think what's important is that our tenants, meet all their tenancy conditions. There is... In terms of our ability to keep social housing, tenants do build up the right to buy or the right to acquire.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the government has brought in as part of the grant that government gives us to build new homes, there will be something being introduced called the right to shared ownership, so people can start to actually buy parts of their property.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, it might be if you are... a tenant and you start to get promoted at work and you make some, you know, build up some savings, that you become a partial owner of your property in conjunction with us. So, but as a general principle, social housing, yes, is there in perpetuity, subject to, you know, whatever conditions the government puts on that, such as the right to buy or the right to shared ownership.
Now, on Wednesday, it was announced in the Cabinet reshuffle that Michael Gove is now the Housing Secretary. What do you think he needs to do to improve the housing situation in this country over and above his predecessor? Now, after all, Michael Gove is the Cabinet member with the most experience in the government's Cabinet. What would you like to see him do?
Yeah, so Michael Gove, I think, is a very positive appointment. Michael Gove, whatever ministerial portfolio he's held, he's put a lot of change in place. I think what's important for us is commitment, that we've got someone who's passionate about social housing, and every indication is that Michael is. I know that, but Eddie Hughes is still within the Ministry for Housing, and Eddie's obviously a local MP who I do know well, and Eddie is previously chair of Walsall Housing Group, again is a passionate advocate for social housing. So we need people who are passionate. We need investment. I touched on the issue of zero carbon and how do we improve our homes, so as well as the issue of can we have continued grants from government to support the development of new homes. We also could do with some assistance to enable us to tackle this significant issue of of zero carbon and decarbonisation of our homes. So I think those particular areas, I think just being an advocate, not, I suppose, creating too much change, I think we have had occasionally ministers who sort of have dabbled. But I think Michael Gove, you know, I have a lot of respect for Michael, actually.
The Prime Minister has...
Very bright.
He's put him in place for levelling up, that's the word that they used, for levelling up the programme to help communities who feel that they've been left behind. Now, he became the Environment Secretary in June 2017. So there's some experience in relation to, carbon neutralising. And he proved a key advocate of Theresa May's Brexit deal while other Brexiteer cabinet members ministers disagreed. But in 2016, he scuppered the leadership hopes of Boris Johnson by announcing his own candidature on the morning of Johnson's campaign. Of course, he lost out to him. But he was a key ally of David Cameron. And obviously he served as an MP for Surrey Heath for 16 years now. He does bring a wealth of experience.
Absolutely.
I was just going to say,
the other area, and it's I guess it's outside of his portfolio because it sits under the Department of Work and Pensions, but this whole issue about affordability for tenants and universal credit and some of the challenges there. So I think, working cross-departmentally, I think if Michael could bring that to his portfolio, because I think some aspects of our work sits under the Department of Business as well, and under BEIS. So I think Michael can lend that sort of collaborative cabinet approach as well to this.
Well, it all remains to be seen, of course, in the forthcoming time. How can we find out more about Black Country Housing Group, Amanda?
Okay, so you touched on our website, so that's www.bchg.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter and find us under Black Country Housing Group. You can get in touch with us by email. If you are a tenant of ours, you can comment on your service delivery through a means that we have called BCHG Chat, where you can give live updates. So always happy to provide further information, Clive.
Sure. And if not everybody is an internet user, can we ring you?
No. So we Sorry, did you say ring?
Yes.
How can you ring?
Yeah, how can we ring you if you've got the office number?
Yeah. Now you've got me.
I'll find it. Don't worry. But the short answer is we can.
It's 0121 561 1969 should get you through. But we have got an 0300 number.
So 0121 561 1969. Super. Amanda Thompson, CEO of the Black Country Housing Group. Thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Live.
Thank you.
That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.